Hello, and welcome to Front Page Radio with your host, international journalist Dan Wooding, the founder of Assist Ministries and the Assist News Service. Dan has been a journalist covering the world for more than 41 years now with a focus on missions. And now here's Dan Wooding with today's guest.
Welcome to today's program, and I am at a very unique place called Joy Junction, which is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's run by my dear friend, Dr. Jeremy Reynolds, and we have one of the very important members of staff here. His name is Jonathan Matheny. He is the volunteer coordinator and general dog's buddy, which means he does just about everything for Jeremy. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Thanks, Dan.
Now, you happened to, even though you live in Albuquerque, you happened to have joined us in this world in Hong Kong. Tell us a bit about the family you were born into.
Well, my mother is Chinese. She was raised in Hong Kong, and my father was doing some work overseas in Hong Kong when he met my mother. And I was born in Hong Kong, but my younger sister was born in the States.
Okay.
We migrated to the States when I was just a few years old.
So, did you go to school in Hong Kong?
Only for a couple years, and then after that, we moved to a little place called Davis in California, and that's where I did most of my growing up.
And that was they have the famous university there?
Yep, University of Davis, University of California, Davis, good medical school, engineering school.
Now, I understand you actually went to a Jesuit school. Why on earth did you go to a Jesuit school rather than a public school?
At first, the Jesuit school was more forced by my mother.
Yeah.
She wanted me to be trained and taught really well. And then the Jesuits in their teaching patterns were teaching us everything. And so a little bit, a couple years into the schooling, she wasn't too happy with it.
Yeah.
Because they were teaching us everything. So, you know, that's a bone of contention between her and I still.
Now, I hear these stories of, you know, how strict the Jesuits were. Did you find them there to be that way?
They were only strict about us asking questions. They wanted us to ask questions about everything, not take anything for granted.
Wow. So were you a bit of a troublemaker in those days?
Probably more so than I would like to think I was. I did have my share of runarounds with the priests and with the other kids, mostly me running away from them. But, yeah, I was a little bit of a troublemaker.
Now, you got very much involved into computers and this sort of thing, but when you finally graduated, were you called a Christian at the time, or was this a later thing?
I kind of drew away from the Catholic Church. When I graduated high school, I dropped straight into the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
And through the next bunch of years, it kind of lapsed. The
yeah.
Catholicism kind of lapsed a little bit. And then I didn't really go back to Catholicism. I took more of a Christianity approach, more mm-hmm. broad-based.
Yeah.
So
you say you went into the corporate world, and you threw yourself in, I understand, that, you know, in some ways it was quite damaging for you. But tell us what your job was.
Basically, when I started in the corporate world, I started just doing phone support, tech support, and helping out other divisions. And then from there, it went into, at its peak, helping reorganize companies.
Hmm.
And during those reorganizations, you are correct, I'd throw myself totally into the work. So 17 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it would just continue and just keep going.
So you'd be sent to a certain place just in the U.S., or was it all over the world?
No, when I was with Symantec, I was flying to Sydney, Tokyo, London, Paris. I was flying all over the world because I was training network engineering divisions
mm-hmm.
on technical support. So that took its toll
wow.
on me. And then eventually what happened after so many years, when I was 35, I had a minor heart attack. And
oh,
that kind
wow.
of knocked me out of the corporate waters for quite a while.
So what exactly happened? Were you actually teaching at the time?
No, ironically, I was sitting at a TGI Fridays in San Ramon, drinking a glass of water, reading the newspaper, and fell over.
Damn.
And then woke up in the hospital.
Wow. So that was quite a warning to you. But did you take it seriously, or did you just, once you got over this, carry on again?
No, I took it seriously, but what ended up happening is because of the jobs that I was doing, nobody would hire me because of the high stress. They didn't
yeah.
want anybody falling out on them, and so I wasn't finding any contracts.
Yeah.
So I started to drop into a pretty deep depression, and part of that depression was crawling into a vodka bottle.
Oh boy.
For quite a few years.
Yeah. So how did that all start? Did somebody introduce you to that type of booze, or Did you just get a taste for it?
Yeah. I mean, even in the corporate world, it was I was always a gin drinker.
Yeah.
It was gin martini, so it wasn't even vodka that I was drinking at that point. But at its peak, I was going through a couple 750 milliliters of vodka a day.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah. And were you married at that time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did your wife respond to that?
I think she was more in, you know, I can't really speak for her, but I think she was more of in a denial pattern.
Yeah.
You know, at some point I would come out of it and go back to the corporate work.
Yeah.
Or it would all be better, it would all be fine. Even to the point where, because I couldn't handle the corporate stress, but I was able to talk to people and communicate and make people laugh, I started waiting tables, bartending, yeah. just to get some money coming in the door. And even then, I was having problems.
Huh.
Some seizures that nobody could explain. There was some health issues. So eventually it got to the point where I couldn't work at all.
Wow. Now, during these times when you would drink, did you go on for several days on a binge?
If you could consider a binge lasting 3 or 4 years,
oh,
yeah, where yeah. it was just a constant, it was a constant pattern.
So you'd wake up in the morning and what would you do?
Look for the bottle.
Yeah.
And even at that point, still high thinking, the reasoning behind getting certain types of bottles was always go for the plastic, not the glass, because if I was stumbling home, the plastic wouldn't break.
Huh.
So, I mean, it was a weird thought pattern, but yeah, that's right. What happens when you're...
So would you mainly drink in a bar, or you bring it home, or what would you do?
Both.
Yeah.
Both, but when the money started to run out, it was a lot cheaper to go get a bottle than to go to a bar.
Yeah.
So then it switched over to spending more time at home,
yeah.
laptop on my lap, watching TV with a bottle of vodka next to me.
Wow. What would be probably the worst time during that period? What was the worst experience of you know, the heavy drinking?
Probably the day the hotel room said that we had 3 hours to move because we couldn't afford the room for the night.
So you'd been staying in a cheap motel, and even that, the booze had taken the rent. So what did you do then?
Called Joy Junction.
Now, tell us, how on earth did you know about this place? Now, let me just explain. We're sitting in this rather large premises here, and it's really the largest homeless shelter, I understand, in the whole of New Mexico. You knew about it. How did you know about it?
Actually, we thought that we may be running into trouble in the next couple days, so
yeah.
that's when we decided to start looking for homeless shelters.
Yeah.
And I just did a search on homeless shelter and found Joy Junction, Albuquerque Rescue Mission, a few others, but Joy Junction was the only one that would keep a family together.
Oh, I see.
So that's why this was our first phone call.
So some of them will split the whole family up then?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
So you turned up here. You must have been pretty desperate at the time. What happened?
Actually, when I turned up here, which was July 10th, my birthday, that was kind of interesting birthday present, 2008.
Yeah.
When we turned up here, I weighed 97 pounds.
Oh.
I had just long hair, long beard. I hadn't shaven in a while, and I was pretty weak because I'd spent most of my time sitting in bed drinking
yeah.
vodka. So it was kind of a culture shock. And then going into the multi where most of the overnight residents stay and where
yeah.
my family and I were going to stay, that was also a shock.
In what way?
It was 120 people in one room, 6 inches from each other.
Yeah.
It tends to change your perspective on life a little bit.
Wow. Now, did you have beds or did you lie on mattresses or what?
At that time, the multi-floor was split. There were some folks that had, there were sleeper couches on one side, and then there were mats and cots. And
yeah.
because of the size of the family, we had 3 mats, so
yeah.
it was on the floor. But the staff here, because of the program, the life skills program that's run from Joy Junction,
yeah.
they were able to get us into one of the rooms relatively quickly.
Yeah.
So
wow.
we're much more stable, but you put 5 people into one room, it gets
huh.
interesting.
So. By then, how many children did you have?
We had 3 with the 4th on the way.
Huh. Did the kids ever say anything to you about the situation?
No. Actually, the kids, the oldest, Rhiannon, her first question were, are these kids going to be my friends? And so her whole perspective was basically she found a whole bunch of new friends.
Huh.
So
wow.
they kind of slid into it pretty easily. It was more traumatic for Bethany and I.
So here you are, you've gone from being really quite high up in the corporate ladder mm-hmm. to homeless. You weighed almost nothing, skin and bones. Here you are now staying at a homeless shelter. That must have done something to you spiritually and psychologically. How did it affect you?
It just shifted my perspective.
Yeah.
My priority structure.
Yeah.
So, the priority structure has still stayed the same. Instead of it being more focused on me, it's now more focused on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, it always shifted to more focus on the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Wow. So during the first few weeks, did you start physically recovering?
Yeah, actually, because I've always wanted to help out. I always help out. I don't feel like you just sit there and let things happen around you. But for the first few weeks, I was unable to really lift anything or help mop or do anything like that.
Yeah.
So the people, the staff members here at the time, put me on the grounds crew.
Oh.
And one of the guys that was running the grounds crew at that time got me slowly lifting shovels and slowly working out in the field, and that got my weight back up. And then just three meals a day constant, that was food.
Yeah.
Instead of liquid.
Wow.
So, I started getting healthy again.
Now, we're going to be interviewing Jeremy Reynolds later today for another program, but tell me, what did you make of this English guy now running this huge shelter? He's sitting here, but you can be honest.
I actually didn't have a clue who he was.
Yeah.
And this was a culture shock for me. It was one Saturday or two Saturdays after we got here, they were having this big grand opening ribbon-cutting ceremony.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out what they were all happy about. It was a ribbon-cutting ceremony for something. So from my corporate days, I thought it was a big building. I thought it was, someone gave a big check. It was for the new bathrooms. It's like, all right, 15 years in corporate, and I've never been at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for bathrooms. And so that was my first introduction to Dr. Reynolds. I was like, well, what is he doing having an opening for some bathrooms? And later on, I kind of figured out that how Joy Junction expanded over the years, and that was a pretty big thing. That was the biggest project to date. So it's just interesting to watch him work or to try to keep up with him.
Wow. And then on the spiritual side, did that start affecting you? You'd hear the gospel, you'd hear people sharing their stories. How did that affect you?
It gave me a different perspective.
Yeah.
Part of the reason, even though the way my brain works, and part of the reason why I stay working with the shelter as much as I want to, is because in my mind, I can convert everything to a number.
Mm-hmm.
So I can convert somebody into how they affect the bottom line.
Yeah.
So this changes my perspective because everybody has a face. Everybody has a name. Everybody has a story. They're not just $4 off the bottom line, $15 off the... They're not an expense in the equation.
Yeah.
So that's shifted my personality into thinking more of people as people and not as numbers. So with that being said, then I get to hear their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that shifts my faith perspective.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stories that come out of here are phenomenal changes.
Yeah.
I mean, you see people going from the bottom of the barrel and then totally becoming a phoenix and turning into somebody totally different.
Yeah.
So
as you've now got better, you haven't left, which is, I find that very intriguing. You haven't gone back into the corporate world. I'm sure you could be earning quite a lot of money again. Why have you stayed here?
The learning experience.
Yeah.
There's a lot to learn here.
Yeah.
And especially coming from my background, it's so different from what I'm used to doing, that this gives me more of a perspective. And I have no idea what God has planned for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for right now, this is either a stepping stone or this has parts into what his ultimate plan is. I just wish he would give me a roadmap. So
now, one of the things you do is social media, Facebook. I understand you are one of the biggest Facebook people there is. We had an event yesterday that I covered, which was a special banquet. Mm-hmm. I understand you loaded, was it 40 pictures up or something?
43 pictures went up to Facebook, but the way we've got the social media structured is so that people can get kind of a more human side of what Joy Junction does. It shows the people and what they're doing, and it humanizes homelessness. It makes it much more difficult for you to ignore it.
Yeah.
You can't really sweep it under the rug when you could be that person.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
Now, could you have ever dreamed, in your earlier life that you would finish up working at a homeless shelter?
Oh, no, I've made this comment to people before, that if you told me 15 years ago I'd be working for a homeless shelter, I would have had security escort you out of the building. No, never would have pictured it.
Yeah.
Never.
But now you're saying that you feel really fulfilled doing this. Well, tell us a couple of the stories of people here that have really affected you.
That's hard to do because there's so many. One of the things that I do is get their testimonies and write them up and just type them up so that Dr. Reynolds can massage them into his books and take care of them. So I hear the stories.
Yeah.
And every single one has... there's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's no end.
Yeah,
it's still open-ended, but you can still see them launching off into a different future.
Yeah.
So it's not just one thing that I can put my finger on, because they're all different.
Now, describe to me what it's like to live in a cheap motel, to go from being pretty high up in the corporate ladder to living in a cheap motel. I mean... at the time, was the booze your conscience in a way that you had no other conscience than you had to get your next drink and didn't matter how it affected others?
I think that was towards the end.
Yeah.
Because even while the booze was still flowing early on, there was still, I have to get enough money to pay for the room.
Yeah.
And then the brain, the thought pattern would shift into, okay, I have to take care of X amount of customers and X amount of tables to take care of the room.
Yeah.
Everything beyond that, I can drink.
Yeah.
And then it would shift again to, okay, this is just, I'm just going to drink this all away. And then finally it just went away and it was just the booze.
Yeah.
So it was a slow takeover.
So you would wake up in the morning and the first thing you would do is look for the bottle and start again?
After I started having the unexplained seizures and I wasn't able to work, then it was wake up in the morning, look for the bottle.
Wow.
Before that, it was wake up in the morning and my brain would still work in a financial sense.
Yes.
Okay, we paid for the room for 2 days, so I don't need to worry about how much it's going to cost for the next 2 days, so I could actually either take the day off or go to work, get enough money, and buy a few bar tabs that night and have some fun. So it was still in that almost cost analysis mode.
Did you ever join AA at all?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. What do you think of their program?
I like this program better.
Yeah.
So describe, you have like a 12-step program here at Joy Junction. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's based on the New Living Translation on Tyndale's Life Recovery Bible.
Oh.
And it takes the 12 steps and ports it onto the New Living Translation of the Bible. So very, very Bible-based, which is very cool. That's where a lot of... the Christianity comes into play, a lot of how to handle all of those 12 steps from a more Christian approach.
Yeah.
So it's
so what exactly do they learn and how long is the course?
It's a 9-month program, and over the course of the 9 months, you'll go through those 12 steps more than about a couple times in the 9-month program. So it's not like hitting one step and then suddenly you move on. There's still some time to work on those steps. But the program also includes other classes from other individuals, other volunteers that step forward. We have one gentleman that comes in regularly scheduled. He comes in and works with the people in the program on nutrition, on their health. So it's pretty broad-based. It's not just throwing a Bible at somebody and saying, you know, here, you're fixed.
It also
covers other parts of people's lives so that they can put themselves back together in all four portions, so mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical.
So what happens? What would be the first step for them? You know, you got the 12 step. What would be the number one step?
Signing up for the program.
Yeah.
That would be the first. The first step is noticing that program can help you.
Yeah.
Because the program's it doesn't start on January 1st and then end 9 months later and then start again. It's constantly rotating.
Yeah,
so you
can
sign into the program at any point.
Mm.
And it's 9 months from when you sign into the program that you graduate.
So when people do sign in, what are they told? Are they told if you don't go through with this, you're going to finish up on the streets? Or what are they, you know, I come in, I've got a problem, and somebody here talks to me. What do they tell them that they've got to do?
The program has certain requirements to be in the program. You have to attend all the classes and the Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also assigned a volunteer position someplace on property. And that's helping upkeep with Joy Junction. But it's also, some of those positions are teaching you a skill. as well. So as long as you meet those program requirements, and you do that for 9 months, then you're okay.
Yeah.
There is a step pattern, though. If you miss the requirements, something happens. If you miss a few work requirements, something happens. So it's not like you're immediately booted off the program. There's a step pattern.
Okay.
But for the first 30 days of the program, you're basically grounded to property. You can leave property for legal or medical reasons, but we don't want you getting involved with the same people that might have brought you back, that might have brought you to property. So we try to limit how much of the potential of backsliding could occur. Part of the reason, that's part of the reason why people that are in the program are not in the multi, they're in private rooms. The involvement in the program is pretty deep. You're looking at, you know, 20, 25 hours in class, another 30 hours in volunteer work. You're looking at 50 to 55 hours a week in a program. You're going to need private time.
Wow.
You're going to need time to spend with your family.
Now, you came from a corporate background. Are there other people here that come from that background, or is it a pretty wide spectrum?
There's a little bit of everything in here. I mean, with 300 people on property, but right now in the program, there's about 85, 87 people in the program. So you'll hit everyone. There is a little bit of everything in that program. And the only defining, the only singular thing that combines everybody is they're all looking for a change. They've all recognized that what they've been doing up to this point is not working. So let's make a change and let's figure out how to move forward.
From when you first arrived to today, what would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned?
One I'm still learning, slow down.
Are you like a workaholic in a way?
I tend to get really focused on certain things, and then I don't let them go. So just now working on a separation. So it's still difficult, but slow down. Oh, and be patient. I'm not the most patient individual in the world.
Well, if someone is listening to this and they're at where you were with the drinking or with the drugs, what would you like to say to them?
It would depend on what stage they are. I mean, if for a program like this to work or to find a program in wherever their local area is, you have to be willing to accept that that program can help you. If you're just looking for a program that'll put you up for a night, something like this is not going to help you any beyond a couple days. You have to make the choice for yourself that it's time to make a change. So I would suggest some introspection on it. Take a look at what you're doing now and take a look at where you think you might like to be and how to get there.
And would you advise more of a Christian program than a 12-step program?
Yes.
And presumably they have these all over America, not just at Joy Junction, or is this a unique one?
Joy Junction itself is unique, but the Life Recovery Bible, I believe, is it's a pretty big marketed Bible. So there's probably more than a few programs across the U.S. that are using it. I can't speak to what their patterns are.
Well, we're speaking with Jonathan Matheny at Joy Junction here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the whole thing about this place is it's a joyful place. Well, are you surprised to find a homeless shelter that's got a name, Joy Junction, and has this type of persona?
Actually, I was more surprised at the fact that there's so many families. And this place, I guess the best way to put it is it's so much, because it's a family shelter, it's like family. I mean, like everybody's family, you've got the folks you get along with, the folks you don't get along with, but this place is more like a family. It's not a depressing place. There's nothing that would really get you down. It's more of a supportive atmosphere than anything else.
Can you describe briefly the premises here? There's quite a lot of buildings all over the place. A little snapshot of Joy Junction.
Joy Junction sits on 52 acres in the South Valley, and on those 52 acres there's a multi-purpose room where eating, dining, overnight residence, during the evening that's where they sleep. There's also three buildings that have private rooms in them for the people in the program. There's also a transitional living center that's on the property as well for the folks that have graduated from the program and have gotten staff positions with Joy Junction, and then there's houses that are set around for other staff members. So it's pretty big. There's also a thrift shop on site as well. So it's a pretty big organization.
Wow. So here you are now, living at Joy Junction, deeply involved with it. Would you recommend anybody listening to this that's going through a real crisis, family or otherwise, to seek help? How would they get? Would they go to Yellow Pages or what sort of thing?
I would actually suggest starting with your church.
Yeah.
They can probably, at the very least, they can provide you resources.
Yes.
So don't be afraid to ask for help. And if you go to someone and ask for help, they may not be able to help you, but at least listen to them, because they may be able to provide a resource to you.
Sure.
They may be able to give you a list of phone numbers that can help. So always ask for resources.
And finally, if you hadn't have come here, would you be dead by now?
Oh, I don't even know where I'd be.
Yeah.
I'd have no clue.
You dread to think.
Yeah. No, I don't even like to think about that. Right. So.
Well, we've been speaking with Jonathan Matheny. What an amazing story. And the slogan of Joy Junction is a hand up, not a handout. What a great way to go. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
You have been listening to Front Page Radio with international journalist Dan Wooding. If you would like a free subscription to the Assist News Service, log on to assistnews.net. And if you would like to write to Dan, send an email to assistnews@aol.com. Tune in again for another edition of Front Page Radio on this same station.